Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Jerome Stern Distinguished Writer Series. This is our first of the fall semester. We're your hosts. My name is Matt Wenzel.
And I'm Laurel Lathrop. Hi, nice to see everybody here. There's just a couple rules. There's really basically one. We're not going to do intermissions like we did at the warehouse, so feel free to get up, move around if you need to, get a drink if you need to. Just be mindful that people are reading, so keep those voices at sort of an inside level.
And also please silence your cell phones. And please join me in welcoming Brett Hanley, who will introduce our first reader.
Hey, everybody. Aaron Slaughter is one of my favorite people that I've met in Tallahassee so far. Within a day of knowing her, we were talking about bell hooks and love and life, and I feel like I can kind of tell her all my deep, dark secrets. Just right from the bat, she's open and warm, and her poetry is open, vulnerable, artful, and powerful. She's the co-editor and co-founder of the literary journal The Hunger, and because she's a badass, she's also the author of two chapbooks, Girl Fire and Elegy for the Body. Her first full-length poetry collection is forthcoming from New Rivers Press in 2019, and her work has appeared in Prairie Schooner, Passages North, and many other places. And she has a lovely cat named Amelia, who does not hide when people come over for parties, which my cat totally does, so I'm jealous. Amelia's really cool. Anyway, here's Erin.
All right. Hi, everybody. Thank you, Brett, so much for that wonderful introduction. And thank you guys for being here. And I also just want to get a round of applause for Matt and Laurel for putting this together, and everyone at the English department at FSU. All right, I guess I'm going to get into it. This first poem is called Dissociation, a Radiance. One, Independence Day and thunder knocks the light out of the walls. Shame comes soggy-bottomed and I swell into a weapon. Warrior singe, throat flooded with gin and bleach. I masturbate and meditate. Unshaved, I litter my body with animal corpses smothered in cheese. I fell through the attic floor, split teeth like young corn. July fucked me and I was ragged for it. I am making myself ready, doused in oil for the burning. Two. When I was a child teased for my name, my mother said to tell them Slaughter was a river running Cherokee, the irony of a family tree whose roots couldn't be more Anglican, the name a word meaning run, a warning against pale faces like mine. My family was forged by these kinds of delicate arsons. When my mother was a teen, her boyfriend drove drunk and shattered the girl in the passenger seat. That was the first time I heard the word manslaughter. And did not think this man was my almost father, did not think of my father slaughtered onto a living room carpet. And I wonder which of these stories are mine to tell. Three, my cat carves a crescent moon into my wrist. I sacrifice my body to Nosferatu mosquitoes. I sleep on carousels blanketless. I masturbate twice and forget to meditate. I am plumbed and pillaged by the carnal air, smells heavy like gunpowder, summer camp, sticky knees, and fogged black glass bejeweled with far-off eyeshine. A rabbit in the trees, maybe, or something bigger, some terrible, glorious afterstorm. All right, so this next one. So I spent this past summer at this really amazing writer's residency in Woodstock, New York, where I got to live in this really old, weird, super haunted wooden mansion. And I'm from the South. I'm from Texas originally, and I've lived in the South most of my life. So I didn't know that it could be cold in the summer, like that was even a thing that happened in America. So there was this one day where it was like in the 60s, which is wild to me. And it was raining, and I was sitting on the porch of this old wooden house. And I wrote this poem, and this is called Splinterwood Solstice. I fall asleep thinking about the cruelty of structures, dream of chauffeuring the dark and wake too cold for socks. Day breaks against my nose, breaks skeletal. I take a mosquito's only chance at life with the pit of my elbow. Return to my body, find it overgrown with thistle and barb. Bury a penny tails up in mud and wish for a new bloodstream. I miss you fierce like oil fields. I cut out my own tongue. Your hand is memory, is fiberglass proximity. My fingernails blew themselves silly in rain, descendants of my mother's in the grocery. Yes, need is a gravel succubus, so I tell myself I don't. The air up here, all vine flower, whittles away infection, chills you out of me like fever. You are raw-boned, nectar for the solstice, but I will not anymore become a house inviting ghosts. I will, for now, take the porcelain that is given, fashion a thorn crown out of white pine and simple movements. In my castle of dry brown bone, we are safe from knowing one another. I am a garden of locked doors and open windows, and I am coming to terms with this. I will contort my legs to splinterwood, cocoon in the hot, wet husk of trees that veil their arms and linger light. I will burrow myself in ice and pray it staves off future rot and flies. Oh, thank you. Thanks. This next one is called Notes on an Apology. Once I owned a wooden door and a field of ice, and I was big-hearted, gentle, prefaced my friends' names with sweet and kissed them on the cheeks. Once a man called me brilliant, and all I wanted was to be his little wife, for him to trap me in a wooden home, to zip me up pretty, kiss me in the kitchen while mushrooms screamed and withered on the stove. I am beginning to think of the color green as a last chance that has already passed, and I'm sorry to be so full of raining. But if I could carve a notch into the lampposts of this city for every person who said home like it was a promise. We are fools and monsters, all of us, cobweb-headed and waiting for rupture. Once I met a man, and his words unearthed a softness that only comes from loam, from tilling gently at a gravesite. Sometimes we talk about weather, and sometimes we talk about feelings. Sometimes I worry I'm not looking for love, that I'm looking for a religion to have sex with. In my mouth lives a bitterness that could draw blood, and I'm sorry, but 2 years I searched the river, and when I finally found it, it was dead with its palms up. I dipped my hands in its broken jaw and called it sister. I haven't spoken to my sister in 2 years, a nurse in Texas with a daughter and a cruelty that jingles like silver on a charm bracelet. I want to tell you starfish. I want to tell you dark orchids climbing the window pane. The moon would drown trying to drink up all the things I want. I'm sorry you never learned the recipe to my mornings. I still think of you when the sky shudders and floorboards hush themselves to listen. So I don't know about the other writers in here, but I have a feeling that you kind of end up doing the same thing that I end up doing, which is just hoarding weird little bits of life until they eventually come together into something that resembles writing. So this is, I think, a really good example of that for me. You know, I don't know why certain things kind of like strike me so suddenly, and then I end up sort of like keeping them in my notebook for months. But I had this friend this last year who was training to become a yoga teacher, and she was learning all these myths that go with the yoga poses, and she was really into this one for moon pose. And the story was about this elephant who was like a god and got sent to this planet so that he could gorge himself on cakes. And then he was riding this turtle, which is already kind of a fun image, right, through the desert, and fell, and like all the cake came out, and his like body split open. It was super visceral. And in the story, the moon laughed at him. And so he ripped out his tusk and threw it at the moon and blinded the moon. And somehow she found this to be sort of a comment on patriarchy, which I thought was interesting. But that same friend, actually a couple months after she told me this story, was sexually assaulted. And then, so from this, I kind of, you know, in her experience and talking to her about her experience, all these lines that I was keeping kind of came together under this one thing. So this is called The Heart of the Warrior is a Moon-Faced Thing. The heart of the warrior is a moon-faced thing, ready to strike out its own eye with its own tusk. I once heard a myth about a man who ate a planet full of cakes, stashed hunger in his belly as if there were no reason desire should be secret, and rode through the desert till he split open in the sand. I noticed spring's edges rotting today, and I did not look at my face in the mirror. Outside, graffiti on the dumpster reads, "Soften." But last week, my friend was walking down the street, and a stranger put his hands inside her like her body was a duffel bag to rifle through, searching for keys. St. Augustine, in what we remember as history, thought nuns were lucky to be raped because it taught them humility. He said that in their pain, they ascended closer to God than the average person, which is not at all the skin-kneed truth of being stolen from yourself. When I try to search his words, all people are concerned with is the fall of Rome, as if a country burning didn't fashion itself from matches like these, striking off solitary in the holy dark. Actually, it was an elephant, not a man, the myth of an elephant who wove serpents into a corset for his gluttony, wore their stretched, scaled bodies shameless. I read that when an elephant breaks away from manners to rampage its captors, they say it has gone ugly. That man will never know the mouse sweetness in my friend's morning voice, how she can fall into sleep on the least forgiving surfaces. Still, sometimes I walk around outside without underwear to remind myself the difference between ignorance and trust. In the glorious swampland I've accepted as my home, a man was recently arrested for kicking swans in the head. Witnesses say he was laughing. Here, the planes go all night, and each creature squatting in the brush is another set of teeth sharpening. Cool. So this next one is really super new. And I tried to put, you know, a mixture of sort of some classics and some really new stuff. But I actually wrote this week, and it was inspired by a book that we read in Dr. Kirby's poetry workshop. This is called Not These White Pills Laced with Sun. Nor humid winter's backyard, amber-rimmed sky that bled its fanatical orchards without complaint. Terrible things have happened to better people on worse patches of grass. My 24th year, I was the prettiest abyss. Long chocolate ribbons of hair, beautiful and foolish in ways hard to forgive. The heart is truly an embarrassing creature. Not to claim anything was rotting in mine, only that it stank periodically as if mulling over its options. Whatever came first, the larva or egg whites hurled over the toilet bowl before work. No perimeter of barbed wire to take note of. No guards of the heart patrolling silence or hooligans skateboarding through the night to jump its gate in the shroud of cooler weather, oblivious to desire's opulent chokehold. There were no dogs lapping the edges of its refusal to soften, just expository barking heard through the fallopian tunnel of a conch shell. I promised a god I spoke to only through bed linens I would not allow myself another drink till after New Year's. Oh, with all the lounging, that floral-printed sofa, suckling bottles of Jack I buried in my landlady's garden, blackmailed the deer, anxieties like mice climbing the sun blinds, pleaded apologies only to the ocean for how little of it I came down from the hill to touch, without some ampulla of blue-veined vinegar to sweeten me on living, a ransom to coax me to the streets, the shoreline, the quiet colonies keening for an execution stillness. I wouldn't call this regret. I have slept full-bellied on my own decrepit floorboards and woke hopeful, believing hope is not the fray-feathered goose it presents itself, not the small-armed grieving beast holed up beneath memory's raspberry surface, undone by no beloved hands on sopped glasses, nothing darling and beheaded, not a thing possessing any neck at all. This one's called Inheritance. To be human is to be peopled by loneliness, to carry loneliness like a stillborn city inside you, which is to say I lost my father young and flung my mother's name into a nest of sleeping vermin, tossed the concept of my child's body into a pit of snakes rather than rely on breath to strangle it, which is to say I keep a copy of the Book of the Dead between my arm and my pillow, sleep gutted, ink black in each name, stare in the craven dark so long they all begin to look like mine, to stumble hateful and blind, to share my shadow like a pool float in the restless waves of night's crazed anchor. A bruise is just the blood howling, like a kennel of dogs behind a closed door, and each day is a page in a long book of endings that never come true, every brazen touch a book of leavings. There must be a way to know a heart from the inside and forgive its unruly tunnels, its failings, to teeter the edge between sheltered and swallowed, which is to say that to live without context is to live like granite shifting, oblivious as wood, before the saw's teeth. Every stranger is just a collection of cartilage and marrow with undefined intention. Every place you have felt loved in is another person's grave, which is to say love is a boneless room full of moons where the hands stutter and are reborn finally as lanterns, where we come together, where we sink in, innocent as bread knives. Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. So this next one's a little bit of a long one, and it's also very new, and I was not going to read it under any circumstance, and then yesterday I decided to read it. I don't know what this is or what it's going to be. It was, you know, like 6 pages of free writing that I did that I was going to throw away. And then it became this like really long, like 10-page lyric essay. So I'm reading just sort of a section of that. And this is tentatively called River. On my father's death day, I do not write. I wear a dress, earrings, feel as if it matters. The air a ripe, wet lung, as it always is. It rains as it does daily. I do not tilt my face toward or away from. Fall asleep, hair smelling, cigarette char, and soft ash. Tell a stranger at the bar, if I have to drink another gin and tonic this week, I'll scream. I order another, throat corn husk, writhing quiet like a mouse on the edge of python's teeth. I do not write, do not tell my friends, except the day before and day after. I say it was my father's death day, and it will be. Catalog men who do not love me, their voices scrubbed from words. Monuments I visit daily, as if sentences are not expired in stone, as if I will catch them growing new branches and climb flowering to elsewhere. There is no grave to visit. My father is ashes, which means he is nowhere. The night before, I tell a boy, say tomorrow is my father's death day. We say other things too. Stolen cigarette from a sad man in a booth. My skirt awry, smeared gardenia thighs. It's summer, still August, and always it's neon-petaled violence. I can barely believe it, that I escaped intact. When myself had any choice in the matter, I've made carnivals of splitting my flesh wide as spectacle just to see what insects come hovering the scar line. I'm sorry, and I'm not. On the anniversary of death, I'm wearing red. It was an accident, another gin and tonic. I have grown so much to love it here. And cry now only when stoplights sprawl the wet street like roadkill, rending garments of manufactured light. My friend buckles his knees to meet me at eye level. There is an infant in this bar who will not remember us. I glance at his hands, my chest opening around a stone there is no name for. And laughter, no talk of endings, how they are so much like beginnings. Struggling to get it right and losing to feral noise, stumbling joyous through bush and mud and foreign asphalt. Sometimes there are trees which make a difference. I am trying to get it right this time. So speak to me of swineherds owned by ill-intentioned valleys, of the blood clot algae that blooms the drinking supply for miles, tendons neatly filed beneath the skin, another gin and tonic. I have no secrets, have never. I retch them up whole like fish. My father was an alcoholic. He was probably other things, but time is a river that corrodes all but pillars. Memory and the unseemly dead of us swept like leaves from the street. Never met a body of water so unafraid of forgetting. If we have the same blood, if your blood is my blood, how much of our blood is poison? I was harvested from shells of torn down truck stops, migration a luxury, only river I'd known, the roadside ditch I fled to at 12, glass fractures and shoelaces, gritty 7-Up bottles and cores. I was found, of course, and dragged by my arm from the pit, tearful, begged to live my life within, scrape new existence from that grave of shard and mud. Some towns are small and living is tedious. Sorrow is not the right word. Redemption is too valorous, and I am seasick of forgiveness. I would just like to say that I finally found a collection of thorns to harm me in ways I've only dreamed of. At the bar, a friend says, you have a face that makes me want to tell you all my secrets. I laugh as if I am the goddamn river itself, as if I am any body, silt, stone, wet bank of humming motion a human boy would choose to drown in. The thing about boys, they are never surprising, dazzling in their long-limbed hate, always alive inside their skin, smile a corsage pinned at the corner of their mouth, begins to rot before you even take it home, but oh how pretty in a fluorescent drugstore kind of way. Whatever is burning anyway is not burning here, as if there is any door inside us we can nail shut that flood will not lick open. For example, I would like to share a meal with you without hibernating inside my organized bones or choking down these burdened orchards. The river has no secrets like this. Unless if you call secret what churns beneath the surface, tugs strangers to its center, and if you only float, you will only ever feel it love you, but why? When to be split like sugared bark so gently in the current's rabid womb, even an animal would not bother a death so fragrant. 2 weeks before this year's death day, I turned 25 alone on a southeastern beach. I wore a fancy dress to dine with no ghosts, stumbled in humid dark and forced cobblestone. My grandmother says he was her small button baby, says of his wife who kills him, monster. Yet for months they slept beside one another without incident. I wonder if she, watching him breathing, woke to hear him choke on sleep and felt fond. I ask no one. If I were to divorce this grief, it would make of my skull the same unrelenting doorway. Dormant virus singing its lunatic sorrow in the bloodstream. Fear one day I will again love someone something. One day I will survive to love no one, wanting nothing. And if the day my lover comes home smelling of embankments, iron-drenched mud and assault belonging to no one. If he reveals a hand, not an altar built for absence, or for to clinch around absence, call it sustenance, call us starved. If I beg him to scar me, some evidence of him there and real. If he gestures only to the crippled oak, if the revolver at my neck is to be expected, and his eye a cyan-shaped apology. What then marks this waterlogged tongue, mangled, manic, life-scarred, interesting at parties, if healing is a flower so simple with glory it has never even dreamt the back of my throat? All right. Thanks. So this is the last one. And I just want to say thank you again for being here. Come to all of the readings because they're all going to be awesome. I'm really excited for the rest of the semester. And it's really meaningful for me to be reading here. You know, I came down in the spring when I was considering moving to Tallahassee. And I had a really great night at the Bark. And this is kind of where I decided that I was in love with this place. And, you know, it's only been sort of affirmed every day. So I'll stop being nostalgic now, but it means a lot. So as Brett mentioned, I have a book coming out next year, next fall, which still feels kind of like weird to say, even though it's exciting. So I figured that I would close with the title poem from that collection. This is called, "I Will Tell This Story to the Sun Until You Remember That You Are the Sun." Tell me we'll never get used to it, this bewildered flesh scraping for light. Tell me how small, cruel moments will ruin us, and we will open-armed let them. We will bake them whole grain cinnamon rolls and invite them over for breakfast. We will leave the windows unlocked and beg them to rob us in blind sleep. Look at the hair in the shower drain. That means I'm seeking answers in the mirror again. That means insomnia is going to fuck us until our hearts break, and we are going to thank it. How we unfurled our blankets into the night, and the sky was violently orange, and every day was another yellowing lawn to dance on, to bruise up our calves and forget about toenail polish. Together, we are absolutely human. It's not like a bathtub where the bottom ends somewhere. It's more like an unexpected swell of guitar strings. The singing on the back porch, no one lost or sleepy, mosquitoes sighing as they circle, picking ripe bodies to suck until they forget that they are holy. Tell me about the dream where we pull the bodies from the street and keep them warm by waiting until someone who loves them arrives to see their eyes close. Tell me we can keep them warm by waiting. Tell me someone is on the way. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Can we have another round of applause for Erin? Great, and here to introduce our second reader, Nate Duke, is Andrew Zola.
Thank you. Good evening. Good. It's good to see all of you here. Nate Duke. Soon after I met Nate, he told me that if he could live on a lake in Montana, he wouldn't have to write poetry. And his poems are full of this yearning. For in America, we seem to be trying to forget. But they're not monuments to escapism or naturalism. His writing is always anchored in the good and bad of what we have little better phrase for than modern life. Engines and pesky finances, agriculture, and cities that call to us even as we escape them. One moment, Nate welcomes us to a poem by describing diving into a lake. Make a hole in the water with your hands and send your body through it. The next moment, he tells us, "I knew I'd be reborn as six empty bottles rattling in a truck bed on the forest road." In his poems, we get a sense of this moving between those interiors of this country that seem to remain against all odds, independent of us. And that part always calling us back to coasts and social engagements. We're always measuring the speeds we move at while being chastened by forays into the wilderness. There may be no better statement of this method than these lines from his poem, Map Scale. Put chairs in the shallow of the river to watch it flow. Set a brush fire just to chase it down. Like a chair in a stream, his lines contemplate when called for, but there is always the desire to burn quickly through the underbrush. He writes, "I stood in the dead middle of a field, the tallest structure for 300 yards, begging to be a conduit." And we are rewarded with his whole life played, here not as the slow arrival at a lake or cliff, but the explosion of successive ages yearning to be struck by lightning that never comes. Quote, "What came up were many iterations of myself at different ages, babes crawling, boys running, and young men only beginning to miss wonder, realize they'd spend the rest of their unstruck days hunting." But even in these measures of time, we're only hinting at what makes Nate's writing enjoyable. The crackling of a phrase, the passion compressed between lines. At times we see all his themes rendered at once and are pleased to behold the domestic, the cosmic, the American, the romantic, packed together like a road trip tucked into a sentence. Mom flips dawn silhouettes in a glowing fry pan made of I-40 blacktop, and hot grease jumped as the green-yellow hummingbirds of your granddaughter's first June. I trust that's enough to get your attention. One final observation from Nate. He tells us a land is made sacred by human ritual performed on it. Nate's ritual is transportation, so now I'll leave it to him to conjure his landscape of open spaces and locked axles, deep waters and cell towers. And we'll see if in the end you don't end up somewhere suspiciously like where you're already sitting, but with a little spot of Arkansas rainwater pooled on the floor beneath your chair.
Thanks, Andrew, for that introduction. Appreciate it. Thanks to the BARC for hosting us tonight. Thanks to the faculty at FSU for all the encouragement I've already received. Thank you to my dear friend, Aaron, for reading tonight. My poems deal with masculinity. A lot of my speakers are persona poets, something to keep in mind. My first poem is called Hermit. I said, witness Ajax, or the inutile paratrooper of the forest is your aborted brother, or the reason your dog seizes in its dreams, it's fighting your pain and losing. But you could tap me good in the shoulder, knock me off my riverstone bench into wet cedar needles, and breathe all over my fire, looking for embers, but it's your fire now, and if I had raised you, you would have thought to bring dryer lint, char cloth, something to speed a kindling. Division like, for now, dead molar roots. The viscous curve of spring water aligned with the seam of my hand held away from a fist wet or dry. I think on the first time the cold snout of a black dog nuzzled into my mouth. Art peels from days like a hangnail, suck out pink beads. I knew a woman who kept her lover's scabs in a red envelope. The shed antlers of last year's elk peek up out the snow, and we are unlike them, their hollow record, fitness to mate. Some women gotta bounce up and down on a bed to get their jeans on. I like that. And I like how the coffee stain on the map led us to a blue tarp tied into a wind shelter on a rocky lake shore where we slept through the afternoon into sheets of mountain rain huddled under larch trees just to eat like this, keep alive like this. Dragonfly eats her weight, time, time. They cut a way through the ice with chainsaws, split their own footing, covered their bodies in lead, sink good heavy chain, imagine a sunset behind the wildfire smoke. Open mouths, thick with nosebleed, lake water jackals. The dock is a skyscraper's rooftop from which you gaze into the lake bottom. Acid in the soil, dust wind, smog of all embering paper plates, the path of shale cairns to the old firebowl beach, undress, swim to me. The cries of osprey chicks burst into midges, and I said, kill yourself, to the smallest man on the island. He replied, in addition to the 9 deer, we have a fox with 2 kits, must have crossed over the ice. When you stack 6 flat glacier stones in your left hand to skip fast with your right, are you born a weapon or a boy? Thought I'd be able to smell the rock when I broke it open. New fat dragonfly'd come along, heard the midges from my filthy head, kept my mouth shut. Let black bear swim the channel. Thought I had big hands till they held broken speckled osprey shell. In the cold glass water morning, I paddle the wake of the undrownable boy Adonai. He swims the whole shore, breathes air under the canoe bow, levered up by me, knelt in ever lake praise. Waves strike the dead white shore trees, exposed roots with the sound of any varmint crossing intricate mosses to you. Breeze picks up with the boat lights, and we sprawl between the rocks, contort our bodies, a spider's adventure. Web strand paths through our arm hair, and ripples of a thrown rock are not lost when raised up on the waves. I want in the becoming shape of dissolving circles in the water. Some mysteries. Like I come up the greenhouse, new piece of hose on the sprayer, now I can reach all the plants. Who snuck the gate wet on my little plants? New hose. Work boy says trash fire ashes roil the compost, decry process. The black line made by a dying bluff tree escaping this world would cavort, dissipate into many points. Did it mean ever to link? I meant swallow these juices, but no. I hid small gifts in all pockets. What a family we have. All the while, some deep-meant wood rat thieves away the dog's white mangled bones to such ends. This place could be an end, but that I had started anywhere else. Your life is a dream, so long as you slept just right 6 lovers ago. Your life would that it were spent, rifling the file banks of pathetic leaves, snuck the gate, fixed my hose length. And would that your face I see in the midnight, through the big windows, my dogs cowering, your life. Understand, memory degrades when drawn upon. You've done more with less, we say. Touch and agree. Edification of impulse, instinct. Email me a nightmare you recall from childhood. It's become fashionable to declare primary insecurities at the outset. I was a moonlit lake dock confessing to a black phone my fear of bar fights, the fragility of the sinuses. In a word, please never check the goddamn mailbox in the open in the daylight. Circuitous iterations of preemptive regret. Mama got 3 men in the kitchen up from Conway. Can't get the propane range to simmer. Need another hot water tank to fill the tub. And they cut round knob holes in the pocket doors. Picture that. Recall times you could see your own hair. Nonviolent men will yet keep a list of yard animals they'd like to see their dogs kill. Possible to get a fat blood blister in the mouth. Suck a little sugar off the chaw. The worst day of your life hangs around at the bar to remind you how different this is from the worst day of your life. Send back your lover's books in a dramatic gesture. Hope you don't forget one. Dribble of piss into your jeans as you walk out the bathroom. Wasp stingers pumping through mesh ball cap with which we swat it from the wall. The key is to break its wings, let fall crush brittle abdomen. Notion of penitence without trappings of guilt. Inclination to kneel before an imagined court. Big wheelbarrow with 2 flat tires. Drag it around, sled of ash. Dump everything in the woods. This valley starts to get developed. I'll be dead by then. Donate my body to science. Study pandemic of ingrown hairs, surface scars of dog nails, absurd follicles. Cowhide rugs hang over the rail in the wind, and I see the past as can chimes on the bumper, me driving to a final honeymoon bed with myself. All the women you want are naked, asleep in another June. The lake crawled into my drive shaft and locked the axles. Composure as mechanical frequency of I-beams, steel railroad bridge. Its crescendo met with a rubber mallet woman. Could I be dragged across town tied to the rear axle of a Bronco? Eyes strung from the rearview mirror like dice. Goodbye, traction control. Goodbye, loose gravel. The nation's forests or their ransom, payable to the fire giant at the dead drop spring. Mom flips dawn silhouettes in a glowing fry pan made of I-40 blacktop and hot grease jumped as the green, yellow hummingbirds of your granddaughter's first June. If it was me cooking, I'd beat the dawns to charm the Dowager Empress of the galaxy out of her concertina wire ball gown. If it was me, I'd offload my dreams at your feet as a dozen 2017 Tacomas, forest green, stick shift, running boards, lifted axles, white tendons of dehydrated meat stuck between teeth as irrelevance. Some people pretend it's ravaged beauty or loss, and I call it a game, a competition. Drift the rear axle and throw road dust higher than early sun, the creek fog it woke. Pasture dust camouflages livestock, and this smell could be the end of your brake pads, or oil leaking onto the drive shaft, or that semi in front of you hurtling down the mountain pass, the end of its brake pads. I once crossed the country without a beautiful woman in the passenger and swore at the rear view, never again. I need someone to pretend to believe me when I lie. The nuclear plant is a cloud factory, and all this Bambi-eyed roadkill is somehow tumbleweed, a log, refrigerator box, illusion. Map scale, this field. The character of the field was owned and owed preemptively to the engines of the future and their requisite broad economy. Floodplain on the Illinois River's west bank. An old boy Arkansas farmer cut and sold the hay as part of his negotiation with my mother, a risen dark-haired Arkansas woman. And she assembled her host of men held upright by diesel, wintergreen skull, set them to work, set them to seed many native species, set them to dig a new creek bed and lay up thick sandstone on its banks to water those trees, set me out there now and then to measure the growth of new grass, saplings. A new creek and a new forest with their living bugs and spawning fish owed to the Southwestern energy boys down in Conway, who pump hot cocktails deep into the bedrock, make it piss oil around the clock. And the ground shook and the ground shakes and the trucks go and go. A man says this land is sacred and that land is sacred. A man said his land was sacred and your daddy came over, took dirt from under his feet, sucked the water from his mouth. A land is made sacred by human ritual performed on it. I made sacred that field laid out prone in all its grass, crawling with a ruler, measuring the blades so mom could declare it good, healthy, and the gas companies pump out absolution for fields raised by gravel and diamond bit drills crack the deep shell. Nights, my Fayetteville boys and I spewed gin through the fire, burned our names in that land. Set a brush fire just to chase it down, burned green river cane just to hear it pop, put chairs in the shallow of the river just to watch it flow, never looked up at southern stars because what bank has their title, who will finance such loans, I still don't touch anything I can't own, grass stains on your pale spring back, I washed them good in the iodine creek. You learn slow and hard how to be your own dad, and I always, just yesterday, learn no woman alive can help. So when the June rains heap over themselves above the Ozarks and the black clouds light up orange in their rhythms, ride with me to my land. I stood in the dead middle of that field, the tallest structure for 300 yards, begging to be a conduit, terminus of an exploded cord. What came up were many iterations of myself at different ages, babes crawling, boys running, and young men only beginning to miss wonder, realize they'd spend the rest of their unstruck days hunting. inutile paratrooper. When the last summer callus died on my hand, my instinct was to remove it with my teeth. What happens to strength when it is not maintained? Weakness needs no ward, no leader, no mechanic. Like God with his hail stores, I would ration out summer. I admit I swallowed the callus, but did not get born dead skin summer. How the Judith, Bighorn, and Moccasin ranges of central Montana need snow to get called mountains. The other boys and I conjured small, timid people to make us feel strong. How many weak foils of men did we cast to hold our lives against in glory? What use is a mirror in a dark canvas tent when what you want is to see your face in shades of temple shadows? I hold a lit match of the power to stop myself from shivering when watched. I shine a dimmed flashlight of the power to raise up fire in frozen deadfall. I shun the lantern that could reveal the mirrors hung from spiders' webs. I shun a fire that would burn the wood pallet floor, melt the green canvas, open to moonlight. They gave us all day. Make a hole in the water with your hands and send your body through it. This is how I teach boys to dive. If this lake was deeper, the strong boys and I could dive deeper. Near the bottom, the big concrete anchors with their amber dusts and caddis flies were built in Atlantis, then swum here. When you arrive, let out some air to maintain depth. Spin and scoop mud that's full of little cocoons, roving hordes of leeches. We're alone at the bottom of this lake, or the lake is alone in the world. Maybe an enemy is in the world, and we shelter in the lake. When my eyes feel squeezed, I am out of air. Devise momentum to surface. The way accounts that I will black out before my mouth breaks. My lungs count down with a blue abacus, and my boys want to know how cold and deep the water is. My last poem uses the names of the three Gorgon sisters as its structure. Their names are Stheno, Urale, and Medusa. Gorgons on one wrist and both ankles. Stheno, local poet as airboat in the Everglades, circled round the block till I heard the banger. Didn't shuffle down this gene pool just to recycle. And like good porn, it doesn't claim to be a promise. When you disembark your ivory palanquin at the last house with living plants, I learn well to hold water instead of floating in it just to warp. My pail of blueberries, a good soak in many lakes, a single totemic eyebrow and its code, a black dog who celebrated teeth. I chose to live a catalog of miens that force immediate decisions. The heel for apathy is colluding with others to act in the stead of your tap water, and here's looking at you. Urale. The music in the building is better than what's in my head, but I carry my temple everywhere as a lake its skippable stones. My summary departure could be that spring-fed river staying 52 degrees all summer who now drips fame for letting a boy's dive flow from a liquor bridge down into paraplegia as a botched note of mercy. My summary departure as a celestial body is the speeding chunk of satellite detritus burglarizing the dawn windows of the Mars mission, and the alarm sounds forever back to ground control. Medusa. When I get my teeth like a dog, I won't carry a knife. When I get my tongue like a dog, I won't clean and maintain my body. When I write, it's because I can't shit in the yard like a dog. Thank you.
Let's have another round of applause for Nate Duke. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Please, if you did order food or drinks, remember to bus your tables over there. And please join us here again next week, same time, same place, for Alexa Doran and Dorsey Kraft.